welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, today is November 3rd, 2024. Just got a photo from the local grocery store. I have a coworker who was doing some grocery shopping, and it's wall-to-wall people. She said the last days before Armageddon.
Yeah, it'd be the last time last chance you'll get food. Groceries, yeah.
So, yeah. Yep, right back to 2020, the great toilet paper debacle. But, you know, I can just say again, I have two cases hidden in the house somewhere. I'm not going to say where, you know, just in case you know where I live. But I've had them in there for years. Bill's like, why do you have so much toilet paper? I'm like, if something ever happened, first thing to go will be the toilet paper. He goes, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then 2020 happened, and then, what happened?
She was giving toilet paper to the mailman.
I did, too. The lady who delivered our mail, she's like, I have to get up at 6 o'clock to go to Target. I have to go find toilet paper. I was like, I can give you toilet paper. I've got toilet paper.
Who knew you could be a hero just by having extra toilet paper?
It took me 20 years to be right, but you know what? My people are Icelanders and Irishmen, so while we're busy screwing around, we're plotting.
And if they don't have it, they'll take it from you.
Well, yeah, there's that. Got a long history there, too. So, now that we've divulged all that personal information, bottom line is, if you're going to the grocery store, you might want to drag your feet because it's going to be hell. All right, Doug, back to all that was your joyous adventure in 2020. So, you know, you guys, before we, in all seriousness here, why? I know. I'm gonna blow it and put on like a different persona here. No. In all seriousness, why did this come about? Like, Lyle, you were there before Doug was there. So, what was the deal in Arizona? Why did you feel like, what was the clue that you needed a forensic audit? What even set this in motion?
The evidence that was given on November 30th at the all-day joint legislative hearing, the evidence was very daunting, and we gave it to the Arizona Attorney General. President Trump and others were also notified and given copies. Immediately, the Arizona Attorney General's office said there was problems with chain of custody. I won't get into all the details. And other issues that they did not find it to be credible. Well, that was incredible in and of itself. So what happened then was another hearing was coordinated, which I coordinated down in Oral Valley, just south of Phoenix. And even additional evidence was given. I believe Doug was one of the people that testified as a subject matter specialist in that hearing, joint legislative hearing. And once again, phenomenal evidence, not opinion theory, was compiled. I made darn certain that chain of custody was not in any way questioned, and that was given to the Attorney General. And once again, they played around with it and said there wasn't sufficient evidence here, whatever. As that Attorney General, Brnovich, was leaving office, he did write a letter saying, you know, there was sufficient evidence to warrant an investigation. Well, thanks a lot. That was, you know, a couple of years too late. So what happened then, almost simultaneously as the evidence was coming forward, Arizona citizens were, as Doug suggested, petitioning and contacting the state legislature. I can tell you that at one time they closed down the phone system, the computer system of the Capitol. That many people were calling in and writing in. It overloaded the system. They did the same thing in Maricopa County. They shut down the system. The volume of citizens petitioning to have an audit was earth-shattering, breathtaking. To shut down state capital systems and Maricopa County government systems was quite a sight to behold. And so that caught the attention of a couple of the leaders, and the evidence that was given to them demonstrated that this was not some sort of sensational theatrical act, but there were serious repercussions if it turned out to be true, and what was needed was a forensic audit. Again, I may say that additional evidence was presented to Representatives Annie Biggs and Representative Paul Gosar, so they could take it to the floor of the Senate on January 6th. And we all know what happened on January 6th, which was planned. Just as Representative Gosar, as Paul began to speak and present the evidence from Arizona, everything got messed up and they had to evacuate the federal capital. Very interesting. Prior to that, even the amount of evidence turned in far exceeded what would be considered reasonable suspicion, and it raised itself to the level of probable cause. And the reason this was happening in the state legislature is because under the Constitution, a state legislature has the authority to certify or not certify an election. What was being asked was, please do not certify this until we get a forensic audit done. We already had evidence that the machines had been compromised. We had evidence that they were broken down, that they were accessed. We had other evidence of ballot stuffing. We had evidence of false ballots coming in. All of that evidence was presented, and there was a hell of a fight between certain leaders in the state of Arizona to not have any of this disclosed. Slowly but painfully, what was learned was there was too much here, and with the citizens of Arizona leading the charge for accountability, hence Doug Logan was then hired to go ahead and do a formal forensic audit.
So when you started this, Doug, did you think this was going to be... Do you have any idea this was going to be the can of worms that it turned into?
No. I mean, I had an idea that it was going to be a big deal and it would be difficult and everything, but I had absolutely no idea how big of a deal it was going to be and how much of an impact it would have, you know, on my company, on me, on my family, all of that. So.
So, well, it had a big impact also, Doug, on the nation, on other states.
Yeah, like I said, that's true.
26 states, Aaron, Bill, 26 states, legislative panels or committees, whatever you want to call them, 26.
Yeah, I think it was actually 28 states sent delegations to check and to take a look and see what we're doing, because they were considering doing something similar in their state, because, again, it's what people were asking for. In general, if you take a look at the, you know, stock, if you trade in the stock market, you have to have a financial audit every single year. It doesn't undermine the financial system to regularly audit the financial system. It's, in fact, it's required, and it's considered a safeguard. Yet somehow the narrative they were sowing is that by having an audit of the election, it undermines the election, which is totally bogus and makes no sense whatsoever. And so I think it was 28 states sent delegations to check it out. And overwhelmingly, the response from everyone was, wow, we had no idea it was this professional. Everything that we saw and we heard on media was it was some clown show. Like, we had no idea this is what was really happening going on. And they're all absolutely impressed at what we're doing and took that information back to their states.
That's kind of cool. So do you feel like, it sounds like that would have had an impact on all of those places to improve things.
It certainly should have had an impact. And in some states, I mean, I don't want to say it didn't have an impact, because there's all sorts of organizations across the country that were inspired by the audit that spawned up. And I know that I've talked with a number of them who've said so much. And they're starting to find and detect and to notice oddities in the election, because everyone's paying closer attention. One of the great examples is Williamson, Tennessee. So in 2022, in one of the elections in Williamson, Tennessee, one of the poll workers decided that they were going to just put a little X mark on a sheet of paper when on a particular tabulator, just that one tabulator, how many people went to it. And at the end of the night, when they count the number of ballots that went up, they're just going to see, you know, they could have missed one or two, but is it going to be roughly the same? I don't remember what the numbers were at all. I'm just going to throw a number out here. So this is whatever. But let's say that the machine printed out 800. They're like, hey, I have like 1,000. Lo and behold, they dive into it and they discover that the official narrative from Dominion is that one of the ballots was read as a provisional ballot. And for those of you who don't know what a provisional ballot is when you go up and you show up to vote and they say, I'm sorry, you're not on the voter rolls, or I'm sorry, it says you already voted, or any other reason, you can ask for a provisional ballot and you can go fill it out. And effectively what that gets logged, and they try to clear and validate that you were supposed to be in the voter rolls, but you weren't, or whatever. And if they prove that you are who you say you are and you were supposed to be there, they didn't count that ballot. That's what a provisional ballot is. But in any case, what they said is a provisional ballot was registered as provisional. And in all the states that I'm aware of in the United States, you never run provisional ballots through the actual voting system. You hold those aside, and only after they're counted do they get run through. So they're not run on election day. But the machine supposedly read something and said that it was read a provisional ballot, and due to a programming error, every ballot from then on out and the rest of the day, they marked as provisional, even though that it wasn't. And so all these ballots that were supposed to be provisional, as a result, were not counted. Mm. And this only happened because people were paying attention. And people were paying attention because after the 2020 election and the audit, they started to focus in on those sorts of things. But if you take a look, like in general in the political sphere, it was a very, very difficult thing for most politicians to back any motive that or any initiative that did election integrity. If you just look in Pennsylvania, what happened with Doug Mastriano and a few other individuals who did, I mean, they were crucified. They were stripped of their positions and everything. And so there was very, very high stakes for any politician that wants to take on election integrity issues in pretty much every state, even if they think that it's worthwhile.
Yeah, and that's a pretty bad that's a terrible tack to take because, again, like you said, any company that you have would do some sort of audit on their processes, procedures, their money, you always do that. I mean, you always do that. So why would we not do that with election?
And another thing that a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of these attorneys that took on election cases, they had to fight for their bar license. There were bar complaints against them. And historically, if you're an attorney, you know this, but historically, it's really, really, like, it's really hard for you to lose your bar license for representing someone. They take what is a frivolous case has to be viewed as so unbelievably frivolous to ever be classified as that. And they typically still never penalize the attorney. But literally, for the attorney for bringing forth the case in election integrity matter, they had to fight for the bar license. And in some cases, they lost the bar license. So there are less conservative attorneys to challenge elections now. And any other conservative attorney out there who even thinks about it has to think as to whether this is worth putting their entire livelihood at risk, because if you lose your bar license, you can no longer be an attorney. Almost every attorney I worked with through all of this has had to fight for their bar license. And that is one of the biggest threats to democracy from some of this election stuff as well, is because we've got the three branches of government to balance each other out. But if you have nobody to represent people in the judicial branch, you don't even stand a chance to have fairness within that system.
And why do you think that is? Why attack them for their bar license? I mean, there's a lot of other things going on. Why do you think they're singling out the attorneys?
I mean, it's an intimidation tactic. It's specifically to make sure that they don't ever challenge it again. I mean, if you really dig into it and look into it, I mean, cancel culture has its roots in the way that Chinese communism works, where there's this culture pressure to do things that are right. That's all cancel culture is. And this is just an extension of cancel culture in order to intimidate people from doing the right thing because they think that their way is more correct.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah, that's the real kicker with it, is that if you can silence people and no one can dissent, I mean, then you de facto win.
So
of course the guys like Mark Elias, they didn't have any difficulty with the bar, right?
No, absolutely not.
Because he was on the right side as far as they were concerned. And did this have anything to do with different states? Did you notice any sort of disparity between the states? Or was it just across the board?
From what I've seen, it's been pretty much across the board in the United States. You know, just as an example, so over the course of the audit, a lot of people don't know this, but the courts actually determined that my company was subject to public records under Arizona public records law. And without diving into a whole bunch of the details, it's never been applied to a private organization before in this manner. When it's been applied to private organization, it's always been the limited amount by law. And one of the great examples is a police department hired a company to help vet candidates to use for interviewing, and they ruled that they were subject to public records. But the only thing they had to do is provide the resumes of the individuals who applied, you know, in order to make sure they weren't doing any bias. They didn't have to say anything about internal communications. They didn't have to show their notes. They didn't have to show the process, whatever. They just had to that core information. The courts ended up ruling that my company was not only subject to public records, but that everything that even if I thought the word audit, you know, with a text message to my wife, was potentially subject to public records. And beyond that, even within the scope of public records, if I submit a public records request to a given agency, the only records they have to turn over are those that are responsive to the specific things that I requested. And the courts actually ended up ruling that not only was I subject to public records, but I had to turn over every single record that could possibly ever be construed as a public record associated with the audit, effectively everything that the audit was in, and I had to go through all that and under a very, very tight timeline. And that's, you know, ultimately all the lawsuits and everything, and the Arizona Senate not paying us for a long time, that's a whole nother story, ended up being what caused my company to be closed down. And with this public record stuff, I had multiple attorneys that, you know, represented with me and worked with me, and they all told me that in their 30-year law careers, they've never seen court cases that are so overtly biased in the courtroom. I know that may sound crazy. Everyone who's in a lawsuit sits there and says, oh, yes, the world is biased against me. I'm going to give some of the examples from the court, you know, just give you a little bit more perspective on the stuff that we ran into.
And this is state court, correct?
Correct. It's a state court.
Okay.
So generally, when you're going through a court, if you ever get held in contempt of court, it needs to be something that you willfully could have done, but you didn't do. So, like, the judge can't tell you that, hey, Doug, I know you can't jump anywhere near the rim of a basketball hoop, but I want you to slam dunk. I'm sorry you didn't slam dunk, Doug. You're in contempt of court. It can't happen. I can't jump that high. I can jump pretty high, but I can't jump that high. On top of that, fines associated with contempt of court are supposed to be coercive, not punitive, which means that they're supposed to be at an amount that will encourage you to do what you're supposed to do or what the courts ask you to do, not to punish you for not doing what the courts ask you to do. So meanwhile, we're in this court case. My company is going bankrupt. I've shut it down. I show up in court, and we have this contempt of court hearing with this judge. And this judge goes on and says, you know, basically, this is the most important case of my entire career.
Wow.
Goes on and on about how his opinion has been of me has been formed by reading the newspaper. The newspaper is the plaintiff in this thing. And like just like when you're on a jury, you're not supposed to read the newspaper about the stuff you're going through. It's only supposed to be court. Judges aren't supposed to do the same. And he's in open court saying all these things. He ends up at the end of it putting my company Cyber Ninjas in charge of, in contempt of court, which again, like, I did everything I could. I physically couldn't, one person can't go through the hundreds of thousands, actually millions of records in order to process what is good and what's not. Couldn't pay attorneys in order to go through it. The Senate wouldn't help me. One story goes through. Lyle, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, but I want to say it was $5,000 a day he was penalizing me. Is that right? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so $5,000 a day. Now, just to give an example, when Trump had that New York hearing and they held him in contempt of court, it made national news that they were charging Trump. I think it was, I want to say it was $1,000 a day. So Trump has a little bit more money than I do, okay? Just a little bit. But it was national news, and that, but I got hit with $5,000 a day.
Meanwhile,
I never did, and we're like,
yeah. Meanwhile, yeah. you're being crushed at an epic level. And you know, it's kind of interesting, but we followed this along the way because Lyle was coming on periodically, giving updates and whatnot. And once this part all started, it became pretty. It kind of fell off the radar a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure, what they intended. I hate to do this to you, but we have to take a quick break again. So let's have everybody let $5,000 a day sink in, and we'll be right back. But you're an all-star, Doug. Thank you so much for what you did. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
And all that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold. It's a cool place.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Well, if you ever need a soundtrack for your book, Doug, I think that's probably a top contender. Wasn't that
Speaking
I didn't
of,
know
if,
enough?
If anyone sorry.
No, I just was laughing.
If anyone wants to be notified when my book is available, if they go to my first initial D, Logan.com, you can subscribe, and you will be the first to be notified when my book is released, and I can talk about all these details and other craziness, and I'm sure we won't even have time to go into today.
Oh, snazzy. Okay. Well, I will post that. D. Logan. Tell me again.
.com.
DLogan.com. That's so easy. It's just deceptively simple, but often confused. Put that on my list. Lyle can't do time, and I can't remember the website. Okay. Oh my gosh. So they have, you know, plus or minus 20, 25 minutes. Just to target the information. So they're fining you $5,000 a day. How long did that? Just out of curiosity, how long did that go on?
It's hard to say exactly. The long story is I ended up settling the lawsuits at the end of everything, and so it kind of went away. Yeah. But theoretically, the way the wording of it was, when I started to comply, it would potentially go away. And I eventually did have an attorney that volunteered to work pro bono for me, who was able to process the records that finally enabled me to turn things over. And we started to turn over records, but I basically worked full-time on that for 6 months, going through everything myself, giving over to the attorney, because I needed to cut down what went to him because he couldn't handle everything. So I had to get all the other company records, which I had a legal obligation with my other customers, and like all these records are mingled with my other customers to not reveal them in a public records with it had nothing to do with the audit. So we were actually able to do that. But to go back to this simply, you know, so when you're in a course of law and you have a biased judge, the way that you have to deal with that is you can file a motion to recuse a judge because of bias. And we actually filed that, and my attorneys actually filed bar complaints for the egregious stuff that this judge actually did. And the way that it's supposed to work in a system that's functional and working is that there's a panel who reviews that. They rule on it. They rule that bias was definitely the case. And just so you know, the bar is any appearance of bias. It doesn't actually have to be actual bias. It just has to be enough to that it looks like it might be there. So it's not a very high bar. And once they rule on it, they assign a new judge. And that new judge, because the last judge was recused, is supposed to revisit all of the decisions from the prior judge in order to, you know, in order to determine whether there were things or bias that need to be changed. Because otherwise, if it's not changed, the nature of a court case is that the decisions of the judge basically become the law of the case. It doesn't necessarily apply everywhere, but it becomes the law of the case. So we file this motion to recuse. The day they're supposed to rule on it, they decide to do a procedural option, and they combine the case with another public records case that was also against us in the Senate. And in doing so, they make the argument moot. But what that means is that the judge is gone, so it no longer matters anymore, but the new judge is brought in. But since they never ruled on the motion to recuse, that new judge does not have to revisit any of the prior decisions. They're just law in the case. And in fact, the new judge has to operate as if those are law in the case. To condense the story even further, that judge in our first open hearing got really, really mad at me, red in the neck, and starts screaming at me over the course of the judge stuff, and starts saying that he was conspiring and working with the other judge to make sure that I paid the price or something along those lines in it, which, again, he's not supposed to be working with other judge scrapped people. We filed another motion to recuse. Again, this judge should have been recused. The day they were supposed to rule on it, they did a procedural change and did a judge rotation where a judge ruled rotated in. Again, taking that judge off, making all the things that he had ruled in there. And one little detail in here that's kind of a big deal is in that time period in the rulings is that the other side had filed a motion for my wife and I to be personally added to the case. And if you know anything, that's called piercing the corporate veil. I operated as a corporation. Mm-hmm. I did everything correctly. Piercing the corporate veil is really hard to do in any state, and it's even harder to do in Arizona. But just matter of the fact it was done. And that meant that at the end of the day, when they basically said I was responsible for all the attorney fees for all the other side and everything, it meant my wife and I were personally liable for it, not just Cyber Ninjas Corp, you know, Cyber Ninjas Inc. that was now out of business. And again, this new judge who seemed reasonable, he seemed like a fair, reasonable judge, the final judge we got, but he was held to basically the law of the case of the prior two very biased judges.
Wow. And is that still ongoing, or is that how it was left?
That was how it was left. We turned over all the records. We finally the Senate settled with one of the parties in the lawsuit, and then we finally settled. I think what was it 2 months ago? We finally settled and got that actually answered. Fortunately or unfortunately. My dad passed away a little over a year ago and left me a very small inheritance. It was enough to settle and get the case gone and over with. Would have much rather used that on other things, but
yeah,
you know,
with 12 kids and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
effectively it was $100,000. So
that is there are many, many examples throughout history of people doing the right thing and being crushed for it, but I have to say, I think most people would. I mean, why would you go after somebody who was working on election integrity? That almost makes no sense, unless it's kind of the same reason, people ask all the time, well, why don't we have voter ID in every state? Well, why indeed? You know?
I mean, in my case, you've got to make people afraid to challenge it. I mean, the more I poked at the election system, it's an antiquated system that's poorly designed, and even forget any fraud or any intentional anything, the margin of error is larger than the margin of victory right now, let alone with any shenanigans. And that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Well,
and, you know, in the beginning of the show, Aaron, you made a comment so profound about getting out to vote. It doesn't matter if it's for school boards, city councils, all the way up. What we, Doug hasn't been a part of this, but on another show, and I would encourage that maybe another show could come about, we have learned, again, fact-based, not theory, not opinion, fact-based, that certain socialist groups have spent phenomenal amounts of monies and time and energy organizing to put people in to all the local, from library boards to school boards all the way up. That way they can impact the local elections and communities, counties, and move them away from a constitutional-based authority like Doug's hinting at here. You've got bars, lawyers, other critical parts of the political constitutional infrastructure that has been compromised. And we can prove that. And that's not just sensational. We have taken, I'm using the word we, there's a couple of other individuals who've done far more than I have on this, and that may be another show that we can discuss. That information has gone to President Trump, General Flynn, and several others. Along with a couple of attorney generals in different states, where there have been extensive briefings presented with absolute fact, much like you're in a court, and the evidence has been extremely overwhelming to the point where grand juries are prepared to be called. When that happens, there's going to be a domino effect. That's one of the things President Trump's been talking about. If and when he gets into office, there's going to be a reckoning because many, many areas of our nation have been compromised. And so what Doug's been putting up with, and that was really the most noticeable when we had the forensic audit, was he came up against this very wall of liberal socialist, I'm being redundant to a degree, but socialist parties and individuals that were dedicated to do everything they could to take him out, undo the audit, and to show that this whole thing was a sham so nothing would come of it. What they're petrified of is what happened having this audit and then having changes occur in our electoral process. Now they're petrified even more that Trump could get back in, and he knows what we've been discussing here, and so much more, that he is going to take steps to rectify this. And I don't mean just in theory. He's got a game plan in place, ready to go on January 20th at 12:31, right after he takes the oath of office. And they know this, and that would be subpoenas and arrests and removal from office of a number of people. We're talking in the hundreds.
Well, he does get to replace thousands of people on the first day.
Oh, yeah,
just
every
as
president does. And I think that's one thing they're going to lose sight of is, you know, the first person he takes out, they're going to scream bloody murder. But that's his decision, and every president's
decision. Hopefully these
decision.
Are up and above and beyond those folks, too.
Well, yeah, but they all get the opportunity to hire who they want to work with. Mm-hmm. And he's no different.
No, that'll make him a monster, though, of course.
I want to throw out one other thing out there.
Okay,
I mean,
hold that thought, though, because I want to run that consistent thought right up to the top of the hour. We'll take our last break. We're here with Doug Logan and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
sorrow in the distance. I'm gonna trust and cast my fears aside. My life's a work that I know you'll finish. I know I'm gonna be alright.
So, in a plea to all of our Christian listeners, traditionally, you guys stay home and don't vote. There's a, I don't know, there's some funny misperception that God votes for you. But actually, he's not a registered voter. You are. So, God doesn't drive parked cars, and he doesn't cast ballots. So, please go and take care of that on Tuesday. Just in case you're confused about that, we thought we'd clear that up. All right, back to Doug Logan.
So yeah, just to go on that, I mean, you need to show up and vote because God, you know, God created the world and he created us in a manner that we're supposed to create with him. And part of that is taking charge of our government to do it in a way that honors him. And that kind of leads into, you know, what I was going to talk about. In addition to going and voting, we need to pray.
You know, absolutely.
Second Chronicles 7:14 says, you know, it says that we should, if my people, you know, and that's, you know, if you're Judeo-Christian, you're my people, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. And like we seem to think that it's like other people in the nation that need to do things, and it's not. You know, he's calling the people. And I don't know, the interesting fact, I don't know if you know this, but like the United States Constitution is actually one of the most copied documents to set up a nation that's ever existed. But it's actually failed so many times because its functionality is requires that people believe that God exists and that they are seeking to serve that higher power and that God. And that's why it's worked in Judeo-Christian cultures, and it has failed in almost every other culture that's out there. So it's really important that we as a nation are praying for our leaders and are praying and really confessing our own sins and turning away from them so that he'll hear us and heal our land.
Yep. You have to show up. So for all the people that are sitting there thinking, well, I'm going to wait till Tuesday to see how things look, if you seriously are believing any of these guys who are giving you polls and all that stuff, think again. Think again. And cautionary tale from California. So many. I won't go into all of them. But honestly, we finally qualified a recall on Gavin Newsom the second time they ran that. And against all odds, the signatures qualified. Yeah, they had enough signatures for it, a lot more than they needed. And it showed up on the ballot, and almost a million Republicans did not vote. And I had people call who said, well, they cheated. And I'm like, just out of curiosity, did you vote? Well, no, because I knew they were going to cheat. I'm like, well, why would they cheat when they convinced you not to vote?
They didn't need to cheat.
Like, that's really much simpler. Yeah. Convince you to stay home.
It's going to be a lot more difficult if you make them cheat.
Yeah, I figure we ought to make it as hard as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard it said that if you don't vote, you lose the right to complain about anyone who's in office. I mean, I think that's
absolutely
true. You know, you have a responsibility. If you don't show up, if you don't do your part, if you don't step forth to do that simple act, that amazing liberty that we've been given in this nation, I don't complain by what you get, because it's other people's values that are being used to choose who's going to rule this nation.
Well, the other part of that too is that, you know, people are really, really focused on the presidential election, which I completely understand. The thing that unfortunately sometimes gets lost in the shuffle is you have all these down ballot races. And the House and the Senate, every member of the House is up for re-election every 2 years. So you have all your House members and your Senate members. Both of those are very close. So let's just say everybody runs in. They vote for, Trump supporters. They run and they vote for Trump. And it's like, I don't know who these other guys are and I don't care. Bottom line is he can't get anything done without the House and the Senate. So all of these things work together and they all count.
Absolutely.
The end. All right. The end of my rant. Back to you, Doug. I've spent too much time at the campaign headquarters answering questions, going, what? What? Why are you saying that?
And, I kind of want to say on that note, I've been in the center of a lot of this stuff. I've seen a lot of things, and there's a lot of things that are really, really out of whack. But all indications I have is that there are votes that are being counted that should not be counted and aren't real. But there is not the entire vote being controlled one way or another across the entire election. So you might as well make it harder for them. you show up and vote, show what you believe in, and you'll make it harder for them, even if that's there. And we can't be discouraged. We can't be discouraged in any of this stuff. We have to keep doing and fighting for what's right with everything that's within our control and capability to do while we still can.
That's a big message coming from you, since the system has not been kind to you, and yet you've chosen not to walk away from it.
Yeah, this has been one of the most painful, difficult seasons of my life and trials and go through it. And with that said, I have people who ask me, would you change it? I mean, there's small details I would change, but without a doubt, I would go forth. I wouldn't do the audit again. I did the right thing for the right reasons. I wanted to serve my country. I wanted to serve my God. Somebody needed to do it. It was going to do it with integrity. I feel like I was called to do it and that God opened up doors to make it happen. But if I'm going to go through all these sacrifices and you can't get out of your bed to show up to cast the ballot, what's the point? I mean, come on. I did my part. Now you do your part and show up.
Yep. That's exactly it. Everybody has to work on that. And the one thing we haven't discussed is that with Maricopa County, this all happened at the local level. I mean, you had people at the local level who were part of the problem, or who were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we all go and elect county clerks, and most people have no idea who those folks are or what they do. I think through your trials and tribulations in Arizona, people became pretty focused, like, well, wait a minute, who is in charge of the voter rolls? What does the Secretary of State in my state actually do? And what have they been doing? And what does my county clerk do? And what kind of processes do we have?
Well, see, I think that's one good thing that came out of all of this
too.
Is people all of a sudden started paying attention to what their elected representatives were responsible for.
Yep.
And started voting on those parts. But I think that's some of the most important votes you can cast is your local elections. That's where you can really affect change. Is in your local elections.
Hey Doug, from a voter integrity standpoint, who's got the heavier hand? The folks at the local level or like the state? I mean, it's kind of a bad, broad question, but
I mean, in general, most of the elections are fully run within the actual county. And it's actually interesting. As you go through the ballot, if you, like, the first entry on it has the most number of votes, and as you go down it, like, down the ballot, the last item on it has almost no votes. It's drastically less because people don't get that far. And what you find is beyond the first page, a lot of those races can be won or lost by 10, 20, 50 votes. I know it's really easy to go, okay, there's 2.1 million people in Maricopa County or wherever you are, therefore my one vote really doesn't matter. But when you get down to these votes that gets down to 10 or 20, you got to realize it's real. And those things are determining what your kids are being taught. Those votes are determining who your district attorney is and who's going to be held accountable for the crimes and who's not. So find out who the right candidates are and vote for them.
Can they cheat an election if the county, if you have a county clerk's office that is processing the ballots and they just do an impeccable job and there are no errors and they turn in exactly no mistakes whatsoever. Can that election be, of course everything can be possible, but what's the likelihood that things get crooked after that?
The system can be compromised, and there's so many ways there can be human error. I mean, let's just take a really stupid example. So you have a bunch of people working on an election. Those individuals are not the highest skilled individuals. Those are individuals, even if they're skilled, are not highly trained. And so what's the impact on the election if one person takes a stack of 500 ballots and they somehow get run three times?
Right.
I mean, that's going to change every down ballot for sure. For those that are filled out, their stuff is amplified. I mean, it's that simple. And let alone if there's one person in all that mayhem that goes on election data, because you have all this data that has to be collected on a single day, and that's hard to do. They're temp workers, most of them. And they're not properly trained. So if you know what you're doing, how easy is it for you to do that on purpose? So that's beyond the local election. I mean, there's literally, there's stories people tell of people going and collecting mail-in ballots and paying people $50 for the ballot to get it filled out. So, if that was the case, they paid people $50 or $100 or whatever it was for the ballot that was filled out and went in, the actual county could do everything perfectly, and it still could be off.
Sure.
And it still could be significant, depending on how it's gone. Not to mention, there's this whole thing called UACAVA. Have you ever heard of UACAVA?
Uh-uh.
The UACAVA is Uniformed Overseas, I forget exactly what it is, but it's supposed to be...
Oh, sure, you ask me and trip me up, and then you don't know.
Yeah. By federal law, it's like Swiss cheese, okay? Law needs to be reformed. It's like Swiss cheese. Effectively, in order to make it so that a military can vote, and I'm not against our military voting by any stretch, they need to vote in it, but they make it so they can send in their votes via postcard, the email, via fax, via all these other crazy methods that obviously the voting machine can't handle, which means a person then has to translate that and has to make sure it's only translated once. And one of the interesting things we saw in Maricopa County is even though a lot of the overseas people and the number of military personnel who were casting votes was drastically decreased, you had, I want to say, and this is just memory, and this has been 4 years, you had 30,000 votes in Maricopa County, which was more than enough to throw the election, that were cast by overseas people, most of which not military, and predominantly the UACAVA votes were all for the Democratic Party and not for the Republican Party, which again does not historically match the demographics of what we know of the military. And
uh-oh.
It's not for you.
Sounds like something bad happened. Well, you know, we only have a minute left anyway. So, before we panic here...
Yeah, I didn't like what you were saying anyway.
The gods were not with us. It was just thanks, Doug. Thanks, Lyle. Bye. They apparently got cut off at the pass. But I hope you learned some stuff today. It's an interesting place. I think we'll have Doug on again, especially after he releases his book, because that whole thing, I don't know if you followed very much of it, but there's a tremendous amount on the website. So if you go on to wethepeopleradio.us, I have a tab that says Government and National Security and has a little plus sign. If you click on that, Dr. Lyle Rapacki has a tab on there because there were too many shows. And a bunch of them are about that audit and what was going on in real time. We did the shows along the way, so not 4 years later, but at the time. And it was a really interesting process. But get out and vote. No, it's okay. Keep going. Because there ain't no rest for the wicked, and we all know that. Thank you for listening. You've been tuned in to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
For the wicked, until we close our eyes for good.